This is Fresh Air. In 1967, the Peace Corps ran a recruiting ad that proclaimed, "The Peace Corps is going to paradise." Paradise turned out to be Micronesia. My guest P.F. Kluge was one of the Peace Corps volunteers sent there, a pretty obscure paradise. Like most Americans, Kluge knew nothing about these 2,000 islands scattered in the Western Pacific, even though they were ruled by America. We captured them from the Japanese in World War II. Now this tropical paradise has hamburgers, jukeboxes, and resort hotels. It may soon have military bases. Kluge has returned to these islands many times over the past 25 years. His new book is called The Edge of Paradise, America in Micronesia. Kluge is a former correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. His novel, Eddie and the Cruisers, was adapted into a film. Kluge himself is an interesting footnote in American colonial history. While he was with the Peace Corps, he helped draft the Micronesian Statement of Intent, their equivalent of the Declaration of Independence. He later was one of the directors of the Micronesian Constitutional Convention, and he wrote the preamble to their constitution.
They were among the last of about a dozen post-World War II UN trust territories. They were looking at their future. There were a bunch of politicians freshly returned from school in the States who were beginning to negotiate the future of the islands with the United States. It was a small but very interesting game which I became a part of.
What do you remember writing? What are some of the lines from the Statement of Intent or the preamble to the Constitution that really stick in your mind?
Oh, good Lord, I could find them on T-shirts and in classrooms all over Micronesia. The one that's my favorite and is to the effect that the seas do not divide the islands, they bring the islands together. It was very eloquent and naive stuff, and I'm not quite sure how true it was, but it sounded good at the time.
You know, there's something very odd, I think you have to agree, about having an American write the messages about how Micronesians won't stand for colonialism.
That was among the many ironies of the place, but I had no conflict. I sense no conflict there because I thought it was in the interest of the United States and of Micronesia that they make the best possible arrangement between basically a superpower and a flotilla of Lilliputs. And so if I was there helping the Lilliputs, that was all right with me, and I think all right with them.
Well, didn't you feel somewhat in between since you were an American? I mean, you are an American.
Yes, I'm an American, and I felt no conflict at all. I felt America had shown many faces in Micronesia, military faces, cynical faces, sometimes altruistic faces. And I thought that I could do good, really, by representing America on the Micronesian side. I cast myself very romantically in a sort of Lowell Thomas, Edgar Snow kind of role.
What does it say about the status of Micronesians at the time that they were relying on you to help write their Declaration of Independence and their Constitution?
Well, I think in terms of dealing with each other, they were just fine, or at least not bad. But they were dealing, after all, with the United States. And when their appeal was couched towards the Americans, when it was aimed in their direction, when they were trying to get attention, then I think it benefited them to have an American writer on their side.
Now, I think very few Americans are really familiar with the islands of Micronesia. Give us your basic introductory rap when someone says to you, but what is Micronesia?
Oh, I've done it. Oh, yes. I have this memorized. It's a group of islands, 2,000 islands, west of Hawaii, south of Japan, all of them north of the equator. Therefore, we never say South Pacific in connection with Micronesia. 2,000 islands captured by the U.S. in World War II, previously administered by Japan, by Germany, by Spain. 2,000 islands with an aggregate land mass half the size of Rhode Island, scattered over an area of ocean the size of the continental United States. 9 mutually unintelligible local languages, smatterings depending on the age of the speaker of German, although most of the German speakers are dead now, Japanese, and English. Slight resources, fishing, copra, that is dried coconut meat, which is pretty much gone these days, and increasingly in recent years, tourism. A continuing military interest on the part of the United States, which did not want to have to recapture the same islands it captured in World War II. So that basically is my preliminary Micronesia rap. Then I get poetic and I talk about small, funky, fallen, lovely, endearing places. The conjunction of heat and discomfort with sometimes shocking beauty. The sense that you're in a paradise, but it's a very fallen paradise. The roof leaks. The you drive, you rent may not have all frills, like, say, a spare tire and a handbrake. It's a sort of place that is definitely one step beyond Hawaii. It's not, there's no Aloha spirit, no Waikiki caliber tourism there. It's definitely for the adventurous.
Of the 2,000 islands,
yes.
How many of them are actually inhabited?
Well, only about 100, but many of them, when you give that figure, you say 2,000 islands, and wow, only 100 or 200 of them inhabited. People sitting in the U.S. think, well, gee whiz, 1,800 islands that I could live my fantasy life on, uninhabited. And in fact, all those islands, or almost all of those islands, are regularly visited. It's a matter of having 20 islands inside a lagoon, and maybe only 3 have settlements on them. The other 17, though, are definitely owned by someone. They're not just sitting there waiting for an American to wash up on them.
My guest is P.F. Kluge, and he's written a new book called The Edge of Paradise, America in Micronesia. And he's been going to Micronesia since he first went there in 1967 as part of the Peace Corps. We'll take a short break, then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. P.F. Kluge is my guest, and his new book is about America in Micronesia. It's called The Edge of Paradise. When you got to Micronesia in 1967 with the Peace Corps, they were a U.S. trust territory.
Yes.
What's the relationship now of the United States to Micronesia?
Out of the old trust territory, 4 different entities have emerged. What happened is that when the negotiations about the political future started with the U.S., there were divisions among the Micronesians themselves. Micronesian was always sort of an abstract kind of umbrella term, like South American. It was very, it didn't bind people. It wasn't really a major source of identification. It wasn't what they would really call themselves. So there were divisions within Micronesia, basically on along lines of ethnicity, about 6 different ethnic groups, and along lines of money, the have districts and the have not districts. In general, the have districts were the ones where there was an active U.S. military interest or presence or an active tourism. So there's the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas, the Republic of the Marshall Islands, the Republic of Palau, and then something called the Federated States of Micronesia, a unit which includes Yap, Ponape, Truk, and Kusai.
And what's the political relationship with the United States and Micronesia?
Basically, the United States handles defense and foreign affairs, and the locals handle local government.
So do we still have a colonial relationship with them?
I think probably the word would be neo-colonial, and there are some people who would give you an argument on that. The United States has always liked not to think of itself as a colonial power. We like to say that we don't fight wars to acquire territory. So we're sort of an uncola of colonial powers. And that's fair enough, but what I've discovered over 25 years of obsession with Micronesia is that whether we go there as missionaries or as Peace Corps volunteers or as Budweiser distributors or as military reconnaissance team, we have an impact on the place. And the subversive, inadvertent effects of the American presence are more profound than anything we do intentionally. It's the jukeboxes, the cold beer, the Boston Whalers, the video cassettes. Those are the overwhelming weapons, and they are not intentionally colonial or neo-colonial weapons, but they are more than most cultures can withstand.
What does America want with Micronesia? We acquired these islands after World War II. Japan had them before.
Yes.
What do we want with them?
I think our motives have always been mixed and tangled. Altruistically, we want them to do well. We want there to be education and health care and reasonable economic development. We, from a military point of view, want the right to use the islands if we need them. And we also want what's called the strategic right of denial, the knowledge that no other military power will be in the islands. So it's always been one or the other. We wanted them to come along, to have a self-government, to at least flirt with the idea of quasi-independence. On the other hand, we didn't want any unpleasantness out there again.
So you say we want them if we need them. Does that mean if we need them for military bases?
Yes.
Are there any military bases there now?
Well, there is the Kwajalein Missile Test Site Range in the Marshall Islands, and there are options on military bases in the Marianas. And if we ever, the agreement with Palau hasn't been finalized yet, but if we ever cut a deal with the Republic of Palau, there too we will have military options.
If we had trouble keeping our military bases in the Philippines, would Micronesia be a next best place to look, do you think, for the American military?
I don't think there is a best place for the facilities of the size that we have at Subic Bay and Clark Field in the Philippines. They are massive. They employ thousands of people. It would be a disaster, I think, if we moved any fraction of those bases to Micronesia. The islands are small. There isn't a local labor pool. You'd have to bring in labor from elsewhere. That, I think, would be the destruction of paradise.
Might it happen anyways?
Yes. Yes. It's one of the things that I worry about.
When you joined the Peace Corps in 67, the Peace Corps pitch was, the Peace Corps is going to paradise.
Yes.
And the title of your book is The Edge of Paradise. Has paradise now become a marketing idea, you know, a way of advertising the islands?
I think it has. All of us who live or have lived in Micronesia and use the word paradise now lace it with a certain amount of irony. But there is still that dream that won't die, that people can come to islands, tropical islands, small places, contain their problems, know the place, and live a more carefree and yet more thoughtful life than they can elsewhere. That dream doesn't die, and there are people everywhere I come across who are still contemplating maybe going to an island. And there are elements of paradise in Micronesia. There are black sand beaches, there are volcanoes, there are jungle waterfalls and rainforest. I revel in those things. But when you've been around there a while, you also know there are flat tires, there are mosquito coils, there's mediocre cooking, there's a certain sullenness and boredom which attaches itself to island life, a sort of familiarity that often grows into contempt, and a certain sense of compromise and being left out. So, yes, there are elements of paradise which won't die. There is also an underside of it. And it's the mixture of the two and the tension between the two that I find very, very attractive and interesting. If it were a pure paradise, I don't think it would be as much fun.
When the Micronesian tourist industry markets paradise, what are they referring to and how do they market it?
Well, most of the tourists, you must realize, who come to Micronesia come from Japan. And they come mainly to one district, the Northern Marianas. And it is basically their Florida. They bake on the beaches. They go around to the various war monuments, the caves, the cliffs, the beaches on which the previous generation of Japanese died. And they do a lot of shopping. They go around to duty-free shops, and that pretty much is the nature of Japanese tourism in the Marianas. Now, the other districts are harder to get to and attract a more eccentric kind of tourist. There are, for instance, Micronesia is a mecca for skin divers. There are great coral reefs in Palau, among the best in the world. And then I guess you have people, tourists who come to Micronesia just for romantic reasons or because the sound of the names of the islands is interesting. Helen Reef, Kapinga, Marange, Ponape. There are still those sort of eccentric literary adventurers who come along. But what you're not seeing in Micronesia and may never see because it stops at Hawaii is the sort of mass meet you with a lay at the airport type tourism and then put you in the shuttle bus. They're not set up for that, and I frankly hope they never will be.
You've written that you've been told by editors for years that these islands were too small, too far away for people to really care about, and that you should pick a better subject. This must be very frustrating for you to be so interested in Micronesia, a part of the world that most Americans don't even know about, let alone care about.
I knew it from the moment I came home from the Peace Corps, and I had, as all Peace Corps volunteers do, that 400 slide show that was going to charm my relatives. And the first question and last question is, what do they eat over there? I bet they don't eat like this. And that was the end of the show and the end of their interest. And yeah, it's bothered me. I mean, I realize you can't really get there from here. It wasn't a big subject. And yet it was one that engrossed me extraordinarily and kept me coming back to it. I realized it didn't have the book contracts, the grants. There's no chair in Micronesian studies anywhere. It was really an obscure topic that I'd impaled myself on, but I did want to see how the game continued to play out between America and Micronesia, and I guess I will keep going back despite my, I must admit, increasing pessimism about the outcome of it all. The fact that it's I think, going in the wrong direction doesn't mean that I love it less.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
My guest has been P.F. Kluge. His new book is called The Edge of Paradise, America in Micronesia. This is Fresh Air.